listening to the iSoca podcast. I'm your host, Safia Kazi, and in today's CyberPros Exchange Series episode, I'm excited to be joined by Dustin Brewer and Frank Downs. Dustin is principal futurist at iSoca, and Frank is director and subject matter expert of iSoca's cybersecurity practice. In this episode, we're talking about the recent NordVPN breach. So Dustin, can you get us started and tell us a little bit about what exactly went wrong?
NordVPN came out and admitted that they had actually had a data breach. And during this data breach, the attackers had actually stolen a private key, apparently a reportedly older private key, but it was still, the attackers were able to then spin up endpoint VPN points on the Nord network to make it look like, you know, you were actually connecting to a NordVPN node, but you were actually connecting to an attacker's node. NordVPN came out and said, you know, there was no logs on this server that they were able to get into. There was no way that they could get any client information off of this one node that they broke into to get this key, but it still caused a security issue. This brings us to a couple of different points. One is that this is why we need auditing and pen testing, right, for our cloud providers. The way that the attackers actually got into this box was because the cloud provider or the service provider had left an old management console, and the attackers were actually able to get into exploit or get into that management console and get the files that they wanted. So Nord, of course, came out and said, you know, hey, we had no idea this was here. Well, yeah, you didn't have any idea that it was there because you didn't do any auditing. You didn't do any pen testing. You didn't do the things that you're supposed to do when you have these cloud providers or when you have these service providers. So that's lesson number one. Lesson number two is that just because you have a VPN doesn't mean that you're 100% safe from all attacks or even from somebody being able to jump into your traffic and take a look at your traffic. It helps. And I'm not saying don't use VPNs, but there's more you can do. There's more you can do. So Frank, if you want to jump in here, you and I were talking before this about defense in depth.
Yeah, because one of the things that, you know, a lot of companies will think is like, well, if I have a VPN, everything's safe, right? And as a result, the internal of the network is pretty much a soft target, meaning once that VPN is compromised, and if someone, I don't know, nefarious can get in on the VPN onto the corporate network, then it's pretty much free reign for them. They can do whatever they want, which is a little concerning, especially when you consider the fact that certain companies, like I mentioned, will have present a soft target once there's an access internally. Dustin and I have talked about this before, especially when people have Wi-Fi and so forth. Wi-Fi can be such a dangerous tool, and rogue APs and even just leaving Ethernet jacks open for people to connect. They are so dangerous because depending on what kind of mentality you bring to a network, as far as security goes, you can have some serious issues. So that's why defense in depth is so important. And a lot of people, you know, it's a bit of a buzzword, but not everyone in the field knows what it is. Defense in depth, when a lot of people think about it, they think it's a cybersecurity term, but it's actually not. It is a military term. Specifically, it is a military term that, if I had to put it in a specific way, it encapsulates the idea of an enemy attacking and giving way slowly and delaying and stalling. Now, what does that look like? Well, the examples that we use pre-cybersecurity is, I think, the oldest example is, okay, the Carthaginians and the Romans with the Battle of Cannae, right, where the pincer move was quote-unquote invented. What Hannibal did in this instance was the Romans attacked his soft-looking center, where the middle center would slowly pull back, causing the Romans to go forward in their attack. And then on the strong sides, they'd flank in, and then they ended up, you know, destroying the Romans. And that's, you know, arguably one of the biggest losses in their whole republic and at the time republic, right? However, as that evolved, the biggest and I'd argue the best example of creating a defense in depth before cybersecurity was that towards the end of World War One, you had the Axis, especially the Germans, realized that they were fighting a losing battle. So instead of doing head-on conflicts with the Allies, they would set up on each trench maybe a few people to throw a few pot shots and so forth, and then strategically retreat. And in each trench and in each town, there would be casualties that were inflicted upon the Allies because there would be booby traps left, right? And there would be traps and tricks that were left until the Allies would get so extended. Then the Germans would launch a counteroffensive and then push them all the way back and so forth. It's at the end of the day, a way of delaying and slowing so then a better coordinated action can be taken. Now, it becomes big in cybersecurity, and you hear it all the time. And now it's primarily, I'd argue, a cybersecurity term, because what you have is this idea is perfectly applicable to networks. And the whole idea is that you don't throw out the whole perimeter protection idea where it's like, hey, I've got a really great firewall. Nobody's getting through here. So, you know, having a castle with just a big wall and then everything inside of it is just like wooden houses. No, the idea is that you have a strong perimeter defense, but somebody's going to get through at some point later. Every single system that you have, in this instance, would then have their own host-based firewalls to protect them. And each specific network node, the routers, the gateways, and I wonder if anyone's using a hub anymore, Dustin. Are you using a hub? I haven't used a hub in over a decade.
You should not use a hub.
Yeah, I guarantee you someone out there is using a hub. Someone somewhere is using a hub. And not only is it slowing their network, but it's just such a huge problem. Anyway, having all these different defensive mechanisms out there to then slow the attackers, meaning, okay, you got through my firewall, but you're not going to get to this part of the network or this part of the network, because first you have to get through all the defensive measures that I've placed on these different internal systems. And then, God forbid, you actually get to the hosts. Well, we have firewalls there and protective mechanisms as well. So when it comes to this whole idea of VPNs, yeah, VPNs are great. VPNs are good. Although right now, if you're using Nord, like myself, you should probably really think, right? I know. Yeah, we both use Nord, by the way.
That's right.
I mean, it had such a great reputation. I'm really sad right now because now what, right? I don't want to use Tor because, oh, by the way, Tor isn't much more secure if you think about it, because at least with Nord, you 99.9% of the time know who's running the server you're going through. Whereas with Tor, you have no idea. So think about that, everyone, next time you're going to boot into Tor with Tails or anything like that. But in this instance, when you have VPNs compromised, it's also good then, nay, it's wise, to have different protection mechanisms such as internal firewalls and so forth throughout your network, having this defense in-depth setup so that if something like this happens, you're still protected. The problem there with Nord is huge because they had become such a big de facto example, Dustin. I mean, you and I were using it for the last few years, but all the articles I've seen now have pointed to how big they've become in the last year. I guess they were doing a huge marketing blitz. Yes. And I've had two people ask me, well, what do I use now? I mean, I don't know about you. Have you gotten anyone asking you what to use yet?
No. And to be honest with you, I don't think that I would change from using Nord. If anything, this is one of those things where I hate to use the jack-in-the-box example, but they made a bunch of people sick. However, after that happened, they became like one of the main proponents of food safety, and they actually created some standards themselves. Jack-in-the-box then quickly became one of the safest places to eat because of their food standards. So I kind of equate this to that. I think that, and you usually see this after a company is breached or something, they all of a sudden security goes up, right? It's a very reactive thing that happens, but it does happen. So I would still kind of recommend Nord. I would say, hey, just so you know, here's what happened. But this is going to, you know, they're going to be a little bit more on their toes when it comes to further breaches. And hopefully actually auditing and doing pen tests on their providers for their different VPSs, cloud services.
And I agree with you on that, because if you're looking at the field, right, there is a huge, huge field of different competitors when it comes to VPNs.
Right.
And a lot of them are super shady.
Yes.
My favorite example I like to use is my wife is a school teacher, and naturally the kids at her school are going to connect to the Wi-Fi, and they get really upset when there's certain websites they can't visit, like either Facebook or Snapchat or something like that. So what's the first thing they do? They go ahead and download a VPN. And how much do you think they pay for that VPN?
Nothing.
Right? They're not paying anything. They're like, nah, I just want to go with the free option. I'm like, do you even know who this company is? No. You look at the stuff, I'm like, wow, this is a very foreign company that we haven't heard of before. And you look at like their app store write-up and so forth, and it is very confusing, and it seems like it's copied from some other product. And in certain instances, you can see. So, for example, it seems like those bootleg DVDs we used to see when we did our travels, right, in our previous lives, where you would buy these DVDs from a bazaar. And you'd think you'd get a DVD, say, of Star Wars. But on the back, it had like a whole write-up of an episode of Friends. Because it was like, oh, you were just looking for, you know, this should have text on the back, right? And that's what a lot of these VPNs feel like to me. They're like, yeah, I can now access Facebook, but I have no idea who's providing me this capability. And sure, they're controlling the tunnel through which all my stuff goes, but I can get on Facebook, right? especially when this makes man in the middle attacks so much easier if you're going to be nefarious. I know Dustin and I were talking about man in the middle attacks a little while ago. I don't know if you want to explain to our friends here what, I mean, you do the best explanation of a man in the middle attack and how it would apply in this situation.
Sure. So actually, a man in the middle attack is exactly the way that the attackers would have been able to cause an issue with the whole NordVPN hack. So in other words, they would set up an exit node or a VPN server, a user would connect to it, and then they would have all the information that that user was sending back and forth. So they would appear to be a legitimate VPN node on the Nord network when they're actually a nefarious actor who's able to pull up Wireshark or just do some kind of a packet collect and see like all the data that is going through that particular node. And this has gotten to be such a problem actually with the different VPNs out there that in the United States, at least, a couple of senators, this is a bipartisan thing, actually, believe it or not, Democrats and Republicans are actually able to reach across the aisle on this one. Senator Wyden and Senator Rubio are both starting to talk about legislation on different VPNs and what VPN companies are allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. And it's very interesting to see this kind of happen where it's actually, okay, the VPN issue is such a, and I know we're talking about defense in depth, but this VPN issue is so big that it's actually starting to affect law and policy within the United States.
I mean, when you look at these, it's very clever the way they're doing these too, especially with the man in the middle attacks. A lot of instances, they're not even, there's something called SSL stripping, which is almost a bit of a misnomer, right? Because they'll present fake SSL certificates and so forth. Dustin and I have shown many examples of how to do this in the past. So it's not really stripping. It's just kind of faking. It's impersonation in that regard. But then as a result, what people are losing are so many important credentials, usernames, passwords, and so forth. And it can be done really easily, especially in this type of environment where pretty much everything can be faked. I mean, you don't even know if you're seeing a real version of the internet. One of my favorite examples, it's hard to use the term favorite, right, in this instance. But one example that I think is really interesting that you're seeing with man in the middle attacks that's emerging is where they're just making copies of the pages you're going to and never even actually see the real copy at that instance. And we live in a world at this point where these types of attacks, phishing and so forth, is still a very effective tool, right? And people are still getting these little pop-ups where they have to quote-unquote call the FBI. Then from there, the FBI, for some reason, wants a PayPal gift card, right, that needs to be sent to them in order to make sure the judge won't sue you. And these are still in a world where these are still effective. If you're looking at the internet and it all looks like it should be, what's arguably a very sophisticated attack, right? So it's good to hear that there's legislation that's coming up around these, but it's also hard for most people to detect when it is happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And to the point of defense in depth, if you're still using SSL, don't. It's not secure anymore. Use TLS.
TLS is the best.
So I think one of the interesting points you mentioned, Frank, is that, you know, students who are at a school will just download whatever VPN is there. And Dustin, you talked about how there's starting to be some regulatory changes, but it seems like it's still a fairly unregulated area, not just VPNs, but anyone can create an app and people will give them all their data without knowing who created it. So I guess what can security teams do to help people who work at their companies and are potentially connecting to company networks or company Wi-Fi do to inform people of the risk that these kind of technologies and shortcuts may pose?
Well, I can tell you one thing that doesn't work: block everything, right? I say that, but there's a lot of companies that will, right? They'll block every kind of access that you can to any website. That, you know, Facebook's blocked, Twitter's blocked, news websites are blocked, and the whole mentality there is you must work on work at work during work, right? And there's been several studies that have come out that have shown people need these mental breaks. At this point, if you want an effective worker, it's one who's not always staring at a spreadsheet and wishing that they could, you know, be somewhere else. However, I think what organizations can do is a combination of a few things, right? Now, another thing, I'm going to take a quick step back because we're starting to see this with organizations, certain organizations as well. Another thing they shouldn't be doing is conduct a man-in-the-middle attack on their own employees. I think I was talking to you about this, Dustin, the other day. I might have forgot to mention it. What we're seeing now is certain companies are now doing man-in-the-middle attacks, and I say that because I'm sure they have another term for it, against their own companies before they go out to the internet, meaning they're stripping everything off of the comms, right, in plain text so that they can get a copy of it to then analyze it before it goes on out to make sure that there's not any policy violations that are happening. Maybe people are agreeing to this in their employment agreements. Maybe they're not, but there are a lot of ethical concerns there, I think, wherein, especially if you have any kind of organization or company that is that allows personal use of, you know, a system in some capacity, and most companies do, even on breaks, right? That is a serious violation that could then land a lot of companies in hot water. However, there is very little legislation around this. There are very little controls around there. And in a lot of instances, especially with apps, people are agreeing to it in the EULAs and they're not even noticing it because these EULAs have become so unwieldy.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've talked about technical controls quite a bit during this particular episode. But you brought up a really good point with the administrative controls we can use to be able to mitigate these types of attacks or to mitigate any issues. So it's really, really hard to limit what people can do on a network and what people can't do on a network. One of the ways you can do that without having to go through all 10 billion apps that are available on the Apple, you know, App Store or the Play Store is by implementing policies and procedures using administrative controls. That's definitely a part of defense in depth. I think by doing something like that, by implementing those particular controls and procedures, that'll definitely help. Now, it won't necessarily stop an attack, right? But it's going to help mitigate it. And then it's also going to help you when you have to talk to the employee about why they did what they did. You can say, well, hey, this isn't our policy. Don't do it again. Or this is your 10th time you're fired.
Yeah. And so, Dustin, you talk a lot about the importance of auditing and pen testing in an IT environment, especially one where resources are very restrained and limited. How can security teams emphasize to their leadership that this is something that absolutely needs to be done? And is that a struggle that organizations are having?
I definitely feel like it's a struggle. I think the way to get around that struggle and showing, first of all, we have laws in the United States, right? We have Sarbanes-Oxley. Some people have to send their information systems through audits. They have to send them through, we have PCI DSS. They have to send some of their information systems through pen test and audit. If it does become an issue where you're having a hard time explaining it to C-suite level or upper level management, I think keeping up with the times and showing them things like NordVPN hack, where it happened because they weren't implementing the proper procedures and controls. I hate to say that causing fear and uncertainty and doubt is a good thing, but in this case, it might be. It's just because it usually happens because there's a lack of understanding. Okay, I understand that we might be vulnerable, but what does that really mean? And then you can give that information to them and let them do the cost-benefit analysis and say, okay, well, yeah, okay, we need to do these audits. We need to do these penetration tests. And we need to make sure that our external vendors are adhering to the same things that we're adhering to. So I think that's kind of the answer. Frank, anything to add to that, or what do you think?
No, I think that's a really good example. You never want to completely default on fear, but if nothing else is working, you really do need to point out the consequences, because there are serious consequences, even for executives now, right? We've entered the age where executives and board members are losing jobs due to lack of support for security policies and investment in cybersecurity. So as a result, once the repercussions are made clear to these organizations and these individuals at these different levels, it becomes a lot easier to get things going forward.
I think creating the culture of cybersecurity, another buzzword for us for today, right?
But, yeah, the culture of cyber.
But it's true. Creating a culture within your enterprise where people are looking at their devices and looking at their Twitter feeds and looking at their Facebook profiles as not only an extension of themselves, but as an extension of what they do and who else it could affect if they post something. And I think that's becoming more clear and more evident every day. And so, you don't have the guy who's working at a shipping yard tweeting like, oh, I'm working late tonight, big shipment coming in from blank, right? Because they understand, oh, that's a huge security issue. Then people know when shipments are coming in, and they know, if anybody's looking at my feed, they can see this and that. So I think it is being created. It's still a long ways off. We still have a long way to go, but I think we're getting better at it. And I think most organizations are starting to understand what that truly means to have a culture of cybersecurity built into their corporate culture.
It is. I mean, Dustin brings up a good point there. And it's something that I think certain people in the field of cybersecurity take for granted, right? This whole idea that the internet is forever kind of thing. Once it's up, it's up. And you may wish it wasn't up. I mean, my favorite is you see these certain celebrities and so forth who, there's a picture of them and they're like in an unflattering, like it's in the middle of a dance or something, and they're in an unflattering position. They look silly because, when you're dancing, not all of us look great, right? and they spend copious amounts of money to remove something from the internet, but they can never, you can never clean the internet, right? Once it's there, it is there. And as people realize this, you start to see kind of an awareness dawn on them and they begin to take it a bit more serious. And that's where the culture can come into play.
So on this note of culture, you mentioned that you'd probably continue using NordVPN. And I know in a past podcast, Frank, we were talking about Marriott Starwood, and you said they handled it so well that you're a lifelong customer of theirs. So it seems like there's a shift away from saying this organization was breached, we hate them, we'll never use them again. What are the implications of that cultural shift? And do you think there's still a way to go with that?
Well, and I think that's the spot on. It's no longer, you know, are you going to be attacked? It's just when will you be attacked? How are you going to handle it, right? So I'll give you a great example. I have intentionally, unless I have to use it, not used Uber that since their attack became public. What was it, 2 years ago, Dustin?
Yep.
Where what happened was they were completely hacked and everyone who drove for Uber, all their information was compromised. And their response was completely inappropriate. What did they do? They hid it and hid it under the rug and hoped it never saw the light of day. And then a year later, it came to light. That means for an entire year, all of those drivers had their information compromised, and it could be anywhere, right? And they didn't even know to take any kind of action. And that's how you lose a customer, at least as far as I'm concerned. However, yeah, I think Marriott is a great example. What happened with Marriott? They were attacked. They broke down the timeline. They showed you when they noticed it, when they were able to take action, what they did. It was very, very impressive. And I think as organizations decide that instead of trying to say, hey, we just need to cover up. I mean, cover ups never stay covered up, right? I think that can kind of be one of the rules, right? They rarely, if ever, stay covered up. And that's what makes them so great when you find out about them. That's why everyone's like, oh, scandalous, right? It's rarely because something bad happened. It's because, and then they covered it up. Ooh, right? When companies say, look, this, and Nord is doing that too. Nord is being very communicative. They're saying, this is what happened. These are the things that were exposed, right? We're moving forward. We don't know the full extent, but they're communicating, right? So I think that that's kind of been a cultural, at least as far as I'm concerned, that's going to be a big cultural shift moving forward because attacks are always going to happen. As long as people innovate on the internet, someone else is going to innovate a way to take advantage of that innovation, right? It's just how the world works. And so having this mentality of it's not a matter of if, but when, and what we're going to do, I think that's important. What do you think, Dustin?
Yeah, so a lot of people are coming out and saying that NordVPN is not handling this very well, actually. They're saying, you know, NordVPN is being a little bit laissez-faire about it. They're kind of like, hey, this is something that our cloud provider installed on it. We had no idea it was even there. Okay, but, you know, you should have, again, going back and beating the dead horse here with the auditing and the pen testing, they should have had a policy in place. And they probably will from now on.
And let's take a quick note. Nord's telling us what happened.
Right.
Think of all the companies that don't. That say
that's right.
We were compromised. The end.
Right. At least they're telling us what happened. And we know that, well, we hope that they're going to take precautions in the future. Now, even if they don't, my whole logic behind keeping NordVPN is that even if somebody wanted to get my particular information, it would have to be a very pointed attack. Even with the attack that happened with NordVPN, they would have to say, I am going after Dustin Brewer, and here is his client ID or whatever. And then they would have had to kind of do a not a sophisticated man-in-the-middle attack, but, you know, it wouldn't have been easy. So it still is that protection that you have from, let's say you're in Starbucks and you're connected to the Wi-Fi there and you kick on the VPN, you're still protecting against local attacks. You're still protecting against local data leaks or anything like that. So I still think it's important to have a VPN, whether it's been compromised at the endpoint on the other side or not. That's another conversation. And whether I'm worried about that is, you know, that's another podcast.
Thanks, Frank and Dustin. Now, before we wrap it up, I have a special request for our regular listeners. If you listen to the podcast often, we'd love to hear from you. Our show notes contain a link to a brief survey in which you can tell us a little bit about what you think about the podcast and what we can do to better serve you. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And on that note, that's all we have time for in this episode of the ISOCA podcast. But if you're interested in hearing Frank and Dustin's monthly cybersecurity podcast, be sure to subscribe.